Welcome to the Easy EdTech Podcast with your host, Dr. Monica Burns.
Hello there. My name is Monica Burns. I'm a former classroom teacher and now spend my time sharing tips, strategies, and activity ideas to make EdTech integration easier in your classroom. You may be familiar with my books like Tasks Before Apps or my blog, classtechtips.com. Whether we've met at a conference or a virtual event, you've followed along with my EdTech tips for years, or are simply joining in for the first time today, I'm so glad you're here. You can head to my website, classtechtips.com/podcast, for all of the show notes. That's where you'll find the transcript for each episode, links to resources, and any of the free downloads I mention. We've pushed it back 1 week, but next week on the podcast, I'll take you through my new quick reference guide on classroom technology tips that was just published by ASCD. Head over to classtechtips.com/books if you want to take a look. This week's podcast is titled Infuse Classroom Tips for Remote Learning with my guests Tanya Avrith and Holly Clark. With so many schools tackling remote challenges, over the next few weeks, you'll hear from educators who are trying out new teaching strategies and adapting to distance learning. In addition to my normal quick episodes with classroom tips, you'll see a few episodes pop up like this one with more in-depth interviews. Let's dive in. Well, I am so excited to welcome Holly Clark and Tanya Avrith onto the podcast today. They have a brand new book titled The Microsoft Infuse Classroom, a guidebook to making thinking visible and amplifying student voice. And they have both been working with teachers the past few weeks to support them with distance learning challenges, as well as navigate the best way to think about teaching and learning during the current public health crisis. Holly and Tanya, I'm so excited to have you both on the podcast. And I know I shared that you have a new book, but hoping you can both share a little bit about your background. And then I have lots of questions about your book and your work to get into.
So I'll start. I'm Holly. I live in San Diego, and I right now just do a lot of Infuse Classroom partnerships with schools. So that's been really fun. But I'm a 20-year plus, and we won't say how much plus, educator. And I got my first one-to-one classroom in the year 2000. So for 20 years, I've been wrapping my head around some of this. And that's where a lot of the Infuse Classroom comes from. But also comes from my partner, who will go now, Tanya, who's amazing.
Aw, thanks, Halls. So I'm Tanya Avrith, and Holly and I have been a partnership for the last 8 years now. I'm a teacher. I always consider myself a teacher first. But as of July, I've moved over to Adobe, where I'm working as their education evangelist. And I've been working with a one-to-one classroom since 2010. So for the last 10 years, I'd been wrapping my head around how you can integrate technology more effectively. Thanks for having us, Monica.
Oh, well, thank you both for being here and for sharing a bit about your work. And as I mentioned, your new book is titled The Microsoft Infused Classroom. So I'd love to kind of unpack that term in case it's something that my listeners haven't heard before. What is an infused classroom?
So I'll take that one. And an infused classroom, and of course, Tanya can add on, but an infused classroom is a classroom that puts pedagogy and learning and students first, and then uses the tools of technology to really amplify that. So it might be as simple as you need to do an assessment of, let's just say, assessment or prior knowledge. You could do that in analog by having kids fill something out or take a multiple choice question or talking with them and having them share out loud. But infuse means we're going to use a tool of technology to do that. Maybe in this instance, Flipgrid, to have kids kind of do a brain dump of everything they know about a subject before you go in. So it's about putting pedagogy first and then using technology to amplify that, and also putting students at the center of their learning.
Love it. Love it. And that idea of, right, having that layer happen where you're kind of building off all of those best practices and the value add that technology can bring, I know is something that I think is so important and talk about a lot on the blog and the podcast too. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so excited about your work in general and your book. And so that Microsoft component, I'm a big fan of the Microsoft tools. I've done some work with their team and had a blog post not too long ago about their distance learning tools. But for your book, why Microsoft? What do they have to offer that listeners might not know about?
So I'm taking this one again just because it's the Microsoft partnership I kind of started. And it's because I had been a Google person. I'm a Google certified innovator and I had been at Google schools and I was wearing my Google hat all the time. And I, to be honest, I was like, yeah, Microsoft, whatever. And one day someone from their company came to me and said, hey, I want to just show you around. And I went, whoa. I didn't realize this was happening because I had put on my Google hat and I had never taken it off. And once I learned about the tools and how, like, everything I love about Google, the ability to share and comment and give my friend a link and they can jump right in the doc or slides, you can do that in Microsoft. But I had not been paying attention. So I felt like 50% of the world's population is using, or more, quite frankly, are using Microsoft tools, and they deserve an infused classroom too. So, so I started this partnership with Microsoft based on that, because I really want the modern educator to rethink that they don't have to be an Apple person. They don't have to be a Google person or even a Microsoft person. They need to put the student's learning first and then grab the tool that works best for that kid.
Awesome, right? And that it's just what it is, right? Knowing what those student needs are, thinking about how different tool can support them, right? Level the playing field, give them access to something they couldn't before, you know, all of that great stuff. And, you know, it's interesting you had that experience because I kind of entered into this ed tech space with my Apple hat on. Mm-hmm. And so, right, that idea of, you know, using iPads one-to-one with students, right, coming from that perspective. And I kind of had that, oh, wow, moment when I had a look at some different Microsoft pieces as well. And, you know, thinking about Immersive Reader and the integration that's now happened with different tools. And I even looking at something like Microsoft Forms, which is really powerful, mm-hmm. right? So, so interesting to hear that you had a similar experience. Now, yeah. Mm-hmm. If you want to jump in.
Yeah. I also think it's important to note that ultimately in the real world, when kids are going to leave our care and our love and our classrooms, they're going to need to know how to use a variety of tools, and to understand how to use the tools is much more important than what the tool that they're currently using is. Mm-hmm. So I think that really being open-minded to how we approach technology 2020 moving on, it's no longer the debate of what should we use. It should be more like, how are we using it more effectively? And that's what we really try to do with the Infused Classroom.
That's a really good point too, Tanya, because if you think about it, no kid is going to go into the workplace and use Google Classroom. I love Google Classroom. I couldn't live without it, but it's true that no kid's going to go and use Google Classroom in their work life, but they will use Teams.
I use it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, Adobe, that's what I use, right? So you're absolutely right. You're going to need to use different tools, and you need to know how to adapt to using new tools. And that's the skill that we're hoping kids will leave our classrooms with, not just how to use the tool, but how to use all the tools and understand how to navigate them more effectively.
Yeah, that adaptability, right, I think is such an important point to make because, right, these are skills that can be transferable, right, if they're taught, right, the right way. And so being able to adapt to these different environments is so important. And Tanya, I love to kind of make a spark connection, if you will, since I know I think all three of us fall into this spark loving category also, right? But I follow you both on social media, of course, and I've seen some of your tweets about the book and making the connection between the book and some of your favorite apps like Adobe Spark and how other tools kind of work within this system. But how do those tools, whether it's Spark or some others, work inside a Microsoft infused classroom?
And that's a great question. And I think it's important to understand that the book is about pedagogy and you know, we lead with pedagogy, but we're also looking at the ecosystem that Microsoft lives in, just like the ecosystem that Google lives in, and how the tools can work together. So, you know, when we're thinking about the ecosystem, for example, you have tools like Teams, as we just mentioned. Well, kids are going to create content. They're going to create demonstrations of learning. They're going to show their learning. We're going to use Teams, but we're also going to use tools like Adobe Spark, where kids can show their learning and turn it in inside of Teams. So it's really about how we're using all the different tools in tandem, understanding how to use.
Well, I totally see what you both are saying, right? When it comes to choosing lots of different tools, right, and bringing them into this space, really to give teachers some opportunities to make decisions about what might feel great for them to bring into instruction, but then also that student agency. And I love that word that you use and pulling that into the equation. Now, this term Microsoft Teams has come up a couple times in our conversations. I love Teams. I think it's really powerful. But I'm wondering if you both, if one of you could share a little bit with listeners, what exactly is Microsoft Teams? Because I think that, unfortunately, not a lot of people have seen it in action.
And that's really interesting too, because I think that people haven't been using Teams and they're migrating towards like a classroom. And I find that Teams in this environment of distance learning has risen to the top of the heap in terms of a tool that is super beneficial. And why I like it is because it's a learning hub. And inside of this learning hub, you can have posts and announcements and conversations. You can go into a video call with 250 of your favorite students all at one time. And it has the ability to divide things into channels and also into assignments on the class team side. And it's the channels that I find the most beneficial, because I can have a differentiated channel. I can have one kid, you know, in 30 kids, I can have five of them working over here in this one channel, and I can have another five working over here in this other channel. And that's something that I haven't seen other tools have, is this channel capability. So that is, think of Teams as a learning hub that has the communication. It has apps and information that you can push out, and you can put them into channels, and you can jump into video calls, and then you have Teams wrapped up and can understand it.
Well, and I'd like to add to that, because I've actually been running a class on Teams with students for the last 3 weeks and living it. And I've been able to actually really see how powerful it can be to run a virtual class in something like Teams. And I'm loving it. I have all of my students able to share their screens all in one place, that we're able to share, you know, documents very easily. I'm able to see what they're working on. They're able to ask questions in the chat. I'm really learning how to run that class in a virtual remote way. And everything is in one place, which is really nice. So it's definitely easy to use. And that ease, as so many teachers have not necessarily been comfortable with tech in the past, like just in general, without having to completely remove the physical environment to the room in the first place, I think is really nice. And it's really welcome. So it's definitely a great tool for remote learning.
Can I ask you something, Tanya? Yeah. Do you find that more powerful than the Google Classroom environment?
Well, in Google Classroom, I can't have that conversation with kids, right? Because in Teams, you can have your whole class in there, essentially. And so from that perspective, it's really like incredible, like game-changing. I do like the simplicity of Classroom in terms of being able to have my assignments in one place, and you know, the way that things are, like, there's something nice about it being super simple. I think that they can learn from each other. I almost want to like take parts of one and add the other and like combine them and be like, this is the perfect perfect tool.
Yeah.
That's so funny you say that because I've been in both this week, right? Either leading a demos for people or kind of jumping in and preparing some stuff for the blog coming up next month. And that communication aspect, I think, is the real big value add piece, like you mentioned, Tanya, that just jumps out for me, right? This idea that you can have these, the kids can talk about things in different spaces, right? In these channels. And I think that comes back to this idea of being adaptable and having transferable skills because, you know, no matter what platform, maybe it is Teams for them, right, in the future, but no matter what platform they're in, I think it's a really authentic way for them to learn about communicating remotely. Have you seen anything particularly compelling like that with the group you're working with right now?
Yes. So I can actually share some of the best I can actually share some of the best practices that I'm learning as I'm doing this because I've done so far seven classes. I meet twice a week. So not as much probably as so many other teachers that are currently teaching, but I am noticing some things that are really helping my class work better. And that's really like around the way that I structure these kind of mini lessons, especially if you're working with younger kids, you know, you have to really structure it so that there's like an engage. And I'm really using the HyperDocs format, but like it's coming in handy so much. So I'll have a quick engage. And then very quick engage. And then I don't spend too much time after that talking. I get them right away into a document, like a HyperDoc, and I get them exploring. But as I'm doing that, I'm asking guiding questions in the chat. So I'm using Teams and I'm using the chat for them to be able to express what they're doing. So I'm using that as my formative assessment right there as if it's a class discussion. And then I have them explore, explain. So I give them opportunities within the document. It could be that I'm using a HyperDoc or a slide as a back channel, but I give them some opportunities to kind of go in and talk. And then I have them apply. And when I'm having them apply, I have a screencast video that I use Screencastify to create beforehand and I embed inside my document. And you know, this is super helpful so that if they don't catch the demo, they can go back and they can watch it. And then I have them create and turn something and share it. And so I've been using, you know, you can use Wakelet, you can use a Padlet, but I have them have a place where they can share their work so I can give them feedback and they can see each other's work. And I do this and I keep the lesson super straightforward and super simplified. And I've noticed just from trial and error, that seems to be working really well. Like less is more, very like concrete variables because I can't see them. So I try to give them the scaffolding with the videos to offset the instruction so that they can go back and anything that has any direct instruction, they can watch again and again. And with those best practices, I'm noticing that I'm much more successful with the students right now.
Nice. I love that structure, right? So that's something that you can replicate and revisit. And sometimes I think when we think about, you know, structures or frameworks or things and sharing those activities or assignments with kids, it might feel passive for them. But this sounds like it's super interactive and that they're creating and making things in this space as well. Is that right?
Absolutely. And they like it. They don't want to be lectured at for the whole time that they're on the call. And I think it's hard move for teachers who are not necessarily used to teaching in a blended classroom to begin with, to understand that just because you're not talking doesn't mean that they're not learning. And it's okay to stop and pause and let them go off. If they're working on something that they have good instruction for, they will produce. They want to create. And what's cool is when they have questions and they're stuck, what's nice about Teams is they come back and I have them share their screen. And so their questions are probably being felt by others. And I'm able to then help them with the technical elements, even though I have those same elements in a video, I'm able to help all the different types of learners in my class. Some just need to be shown and ask the question and feel better, and some will go off on their own and watch the video. But I've noticed that that's been really successful.
And even just having those options for them of how they're going to get support or how they're going to interact with that content, I think that's such a value add here of them being in this digital space.
Oh, absolutely. It definitely does help them. And then I also start off the class asking them how they're feeling. How are they doing? I get them to say hi to each other, show their faces. And keep in mind, these were students that I didn't teach first. This is like a group that now has come together and they're from all over the country, which is super cool. So they're learning about each other. So this is a little bit different than probably what a lot of teachers are facing, but we're building a community. And you know what? The kids look forward to coming to this class. It gives them the opportunity to create together, share their thinking, and have some time as a group to learn together. So the kids do want to be in school. They look forward to it. They just need to have a little more scaffolding than they're used to probably in this environment because they're not necessarily so digitally literate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned that about their particular composition, right, of this group. But I think it really does lend itself well into kind of talking a little bit about the current challenges educators are facing with what's really been a quick shift to a distance learning style type of teaching. Because we know that this isn't something that in many schools was very kind of thoughtful or strategic because the time wasn't really there, you know, to make sure that things were necessarily in place. So, you know, listeners of the podcast know I've been talking a lot about working off of foundations that might already be in place and curating high quality content for families if there aren't quite distribution or LMSs right in place to make facilitating this learning a quick, you know, shift for students. But I'm interested to hear what are some things that you've both been seeing in your conversations and work with educators, whether it's about challenges they've faced, obstacles they're working to overcome, or something that's felt really good for them so far in this kind of quick shift in thinking about what teaching and learning is going to look like for, you know, the remainder of the school year in many places.
So I can start. I've been working with teachers this week from Hawaii and Maine and a couple other places in the US. And what I've seen is this. I feel like it's like a stage process that people go through. The first stage is I've got to learn either Google Classroom or Teams. And they spend some time there. And at first, one of the things I give advice to do is really just do the connection first, play some games, have kids bring their pets to school, whatever. And then you get comfortable in that thing that's going to be your home base, your learning hub, and let people take as long as they need to get comfortable there. And that's where they might just stay. But I'm seeing teachers who get comfortable in that learning hub kind of begin to look around and what's next now? What else can I do? Mm-hmm. And I try and say, you need to keep it simple. You need to pick something that you can make student thinking visible so that you can do richer assessments and get richer information about them. So look at Seesaw or look at Flipgrid. And then don't look at all the other stuff. If people are talking about Wakelet and you're not ready for that, don't worry about it. Start with your hub and then go to one other tool and just do one at a time. Do not try and do everything.
Such an important point. And I know that's something that I've been trying, you know, as a blogger, and I'm sure you both too, right, to find that balance of making a recommendation or making a bunch of recommendations so people know what is out there, but then also placing that caveat to say, you don't need all of these tools in your tool belt right now or ever. So if you have something you can work off of and you see something else that complements that, right, it could be really, really powerful. So thank you for sharing that. Any other things that have kind of popped up that have grabbed your attention or you think would be relevant for listeners to hear a little bit about?
Yes, definitely. I'm noticing a lot of stress around classroom management and digital citizenship with students on these calls. And I know Holly just wrote a really great blog post about that, and maybe she can add to this, but I've noticed even from my neighbor's children who've been telling me about really horrible things that are happening in classes all over the all over the place, where kids now feel like, ooh, well, you know, we're going to be here. You're making me be in this classroom right now. And I'm just going to do whatever the hell I want. And there's not going to be any consequence. And this is on top of the fact that these poor teachers are super stressed and they're doing the best they can. They don't have, unfortunately, the support right now yet to understand even where to begin and how to cope with, you know, these disruptions in class. And I would imagine that they're not alone. This is happening all over the country. And so I think it's really important to kind of step back and as you're, you know, if especially when you teach middle and higher grades, I'm seeing that that's a little bit more prevalent. And so it's really having some skills and strategies around how you're going to approach kids that might be super disruptive in your class. And, you know, one of the things I would say if I was going to give some advice is like, if you can remove the child immediately, contact your administrator and contact their parents, you can take screenshots as well of things that are happening in your class. And then it's setting up some digital citizenship sort of conversations at the beginning of the class with the kids, creating acceptable use guidelines as a group, you know, start a Google Doc with the kids and have them have a conversation about what is appropriate. And then at the beginning of the class, go over those expectations as a group on the ones that were created or co-created as a team, as a class. And I think it's really important to treat that as something that is really part of your day-to-day, you know, expectations as a group and get them in the habit of doing that. And the reality is if they didn't respect you beforehand, you're going to have a way harder time gaining their respect now. And I'm not saying that to be rude, but like, that's just going to be the reality. So it's really something that you have, you know, that is stemmed in relationships and really important to establish, especially now if you're just beginning this journey on getting that done early.
Yeah. And I really appreciate you sharing that perspective because I think it's, you know, so important to take these pieces into consideration in the now, right, of how to handle these things in the short term. But I think there's a lot of learning for folks who made a quick jump. And this is not something that everyone chose to do, right? We're put in this situation and doing our best to react to it. But it really reinforces this need for very thoughtful onboarding, right, and bringing everyone into these spaces with expectations and understanding and maybe piloting things to make sure that you have the right type of response as a school community, that you can anticipate challenges or how to celebrate things that are going really well. So I appreciate you sharing that perspective because I think it's so important to take into consideration, you know, as we're having these conversations. And, you know, I want to make sure that we kind of circle back and talk a little bit about this Microsoft connection and what your book has to offer. And because I've dived into it myself, and I know you both are familiar with it as well, that Microsoft has a lot of fantastic resources related to distance learning and supporting students who might not be sitting right next to you or in your classroom. Is there a particular strategy from your book that just kind of jumps out at you that really lends itself well to that type of learning experience?
So I think Tanya and I probably both have something to say here, but the number one thing for me from the book itself is the idea of how we look at formative assessment. And we look at formative assessment as not something that you would do in multiple choice questions. We look at it as a time to get inside of a kid's head and know when they know something and know when they don't. And so that we can change our instruction for that individual kid. And so I think that's the thing that's leaping out to me right now is the best thing for teachers is rethinking what assessment looks like. Because I see a lot of teachers on Twitter or other places saying, how do I get it so my kids can't cheat on this test? And if you're asking the kinds of questions that kids could Google or ask their parents about, you are not doing it right in a distance learning environment. So I think that first section on formative assessment really is the key right now.
Tanya, do you have something to add into that too?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's also looking at the pieces around how you design instruction as well. And, you know, our book looks at understanding by design. We look at how you're backwards planning. And then we're looking at formative assessment, how you differentiate instruction, how students are able to demonstrate their learning, how they're able to think about reflection and how they are able to pull pieces together. So those pieces on their own really lend themselves to strong design and backwards planning. Now, layer in the infusions with technology that amplify good teaching and good pedagogy, being present or not in a physical environment is not necessarily always needed if you have good planning. And so a blended classroom is something that the Infuse Classroom series really lends itself to in terms of understanding how to let go of the physical environment and provide learning opportunities that are digital as well. And obviously that put kids at the center of the experience. And so I think that it's a really good framework to wrap your head around as you're thinking about how you can design instruction effectively and how you can pull all the pieces together and understand what they do and how you can make it more effective for your learners. So it's a great resource in that way because it equips you with the understanding of what all the different pieces are as you're designing your instruction. And that's been the coolest part about the last few weeks. I got an email and I sent it to Holly and I was literally hysterics crying. And it was a teacher in Brooklyn, New York, who had come to one of a session that I had done in October. And she, I'm not selling the book per se, but she liked what I was talking about in terms of like the whole framework around Infused Classroom. And she went out and bought the book and sent this email and was like, this is uncharted territory. And she said, like, I feel much more equipped knowing that I had this head start and have this resource and this understanding of how I can use these tools more effectively in my teaching. And thank you. You know, so I think that's really what's powerful about what we're trying to do with the book. It's really about helping teachers understand how to navigate this space.
And it's a big, you know, wide open space when we think about education technology, right? So, right, having the framework, right, being able to look at things through a specific lens, like you've presented them, and even taking something that we think of as being a really regular classroom routine, like a quiz or formative assessment, and making sure that we're adding that value add, you know, that technology brings is just, it's really powerful to hear from both of you make these connections that are not just the kind of fun and flashy, isn't ed tech great, but really rooted in these best practices. So I appreciate you both giving such, you know, concrete examples and really giving people things to run with. And, you know, you both share so much, right? Not only do you have this wonderful new book, but you have really robust social platforms. So I'd love for you both to just take a moment and share where listeners can connect with you and find out more about your work and what you're excited about within this space.
Well, first of all, if they're not following Holly's blog, they must. She has a really phenomenal blog, and I can be like a proud sister and tell people definitely check out Holly's blog. Another place that you could definitely catch us is on Facebook. We've been doing lives and we have an Infused Classroom group that's really becoming super alive and exciting and a ton of action going on in there. And we are hosting Edu Slams. And Holly, remind me again, this is where my brain goes mommy dead. When are our Edu Slams?
So the Edu Slams are happening on Mondays and Wednesdays at 4 p.m. And that's on the Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/Infuse Classroom. And if I can add to some of the places, of course, she said my blog.
Please
and thank
do.
You.
That's
hollyclark.org. But Matt Miller and I, who Matt Miller wrote the Ditch That textbook, he and I have a partnership with Microsoft, and it's not about any Microsoft things. Microsoft just wants to support teachers, so they asked if we would help out on that. So we have a new website called onlinelearningideas.com. It happens to be down right now because there was so much traffic that it crashed. And but it'll be up by the weekend, or Matt said maybe even today. And it has a little bit to do with his own website traffic. But we have that, and we're trying to curate the best stuff. We're also having lives over there twice a week, sometimes three times a week. So I just wanted to say that those are places as well.
Awesome. And I love the live video. So excited to hear that you're doing all that and utilizing Facebook groups. So I'll make sure to link to all of that. So wherever you are listening to the podcast, you'll find links to all those things so that you connect with both of these amazing authors. So thank you both so much for jumping on with me today.
Thank you for having us. And thank you for all the amazing work you're doing. It's so refreshing to hear about all the amazing work that we see you engage in all the time, like your Instagram and your Twitter and your blog. Yeah. It's just a plethora of information. So thank you for the work you do.
And you also do tasks before apps too, which is the same sort of thing. So there's so many resources out there from you as well.
Oh, well, thank you both for that. And yep, I'm glad to have some like-minded folks to share a little bit about their work. So thank you both.
So let's make this EdTech easy. If you want to try out some of the Infuse classroom strategies, here are a couple quick tips. First, determine your why for using technology. Then take stock of what is already working as a foundation. Next, decide what you can layer on to provide value. And finally, reflect and share your experience. If you want to grab Tanya and Holly's new book, I've added it to the show notes for this episode, classtechtips.com/podcast, or you can search for the Microsoft Infuse Classroom wherever you listen to podcasts. Next week on the podcast, I'll take you through my new quick reference guide on classroom technology tips that was just published by ASCD. Head over to classtechtips.com/books if you want to take a look. I love bringing you free resources like this podcast to energize and elevate teaching and learning. Can you do me a favor? If you like the podcast, leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this. Tell a friend about the podcast or post a link to the episode on your social media. And if you'd like to stay connected, follow @ClassTechTips on Instagram or your favorite social network. I visit schools and conferences all over the world and host lots of virtual presentations too. So if your organization is in need of professional learning, just send a message my way.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Easy EdTech Podcast wherever you're listening.